Thank you, everybody. Good morning. It's going to be hard to leave these wonderful faces that I got connected to. Torah connects people more than anything else, so we've shared a lot of Torah together. I feel like part of the community already. Okay, our topic for today is jealousy. And jealousy is a difficult topic. It's difficult because it's one of these midos that when we feel it, we feel embarrassed that we're feeling it. And I've mentioned a few times that one of the main muster ideas that I learned from Rabbi Dr. Tversky was that your primary response is not in your control. There's no bechira with primary responses. Secondary responses is where our bechira starts. And therefore, if you see something that somebody has that you wish you have, and you feel a pinch, that is the nature of many, many people. So your secondary response, now that I'm feeling this, what do I want to do about it? And I mentioned, I think yesterday, that Rabbi Dr. Tversky said that a lot of good Jewish women, their secondary response is to be critical of their primary response. What's wrong with me? Why am I feeling this way? He says, no, it is what it is. And we accept the primary response, and then we move into Bechira mode. What am I doing about this? So this is a difficult midah. It's a difficult midah, and it's a very common midah. Shlomo HaMelech says very strong things about jealousy. He says, Kasha kishol kina. Kina is difficult like Gehenna. Or kav atzmos kina. Kina rots the bones. And we have a very interesting makor. When Hashem creates Chava, there's a medrash, in Medrash Rabbah, that says, Histakel mi ayin livrosa. Hashem was considering what organ, what part of Adam's body should I use to create Chava. And one of the Havaminas, one of the possibilities, was to create Chava from Adam's heart. That would have been very romantic. And the Medrash says that Hashem decided not to do that. Shelo tieh kantanit. So she shouldn't be a jealous person. Now, the way we understand this is really, if you had to choose the word that the Medrash is trying to tell you, is that she shouldn't be overly emotional. If you create a woman from a man's heart, she's going to be very emotional. And we're emotional as it is. We weren't created from the man's heart, and we're very emotional. But the question is, why did the Medrash say shelotia kantanit? Could it say shelotia kaasanit, shelotia atzuva, or shelotia rakshanit? She shouldn't be emotional. So the Mefarshim on the Medrash say that we learn from this that kina is aim hamidos kulam. It's like the mother of the emotions is jealousy. Now, if you're not a person who experiences jealousy, you could breathe a sigh of relief and say, wow, I'm really lucky that I don't struggle with this midah. But there's somebody in your life who probably does struggle with this midah. So if you're not personally a victim of it, you have to be able to have compassion towards people who really are very jealous. So we're going to try to understand today a little bit, what is this midah all about? How does it work? And years ago, I developed this concept that I call the jealousy family. The jealousy family is five different midos that are all around the concept of how I relate to your success. So it goes from the very worst to the best. I'll list out the five and then we'll deal with them. Number one, tsaras ayin. Tsaras ayin is a form of jealousy. Some of the makoros use them interchangeably, but the Bali Musar who make a distinction say, what does tsaras ayin mean? Tsar means narrow, a narrow eye. When I look at you, I don't see the whole you. I see you through a very narrow slit, one dimension. What dimension of you do I see? The way you make me feel about me. It's not really about you. It's how I feel about myself when I see you. And Tsaras Ayin, according to the Altar of Kelm, has a very interesting, specific flavor to it, which is why it's the worst midah. We're going to see the next one is plain, regular kinah. We're going to get there. Tsaras Ayin is worse than kinah. Why? Because the Altar of Kelm says that Tsaras Ayin is when you're bothered by somebody's success, by what they have, when you don't even need that thing. Kina, number two, the Alter Kelm says, L'chaveri yesh etzeh gam li yeh, meaning you have something that I need, and it bothers me. So that's why it's already category two, because it's more understandable. This is a very sensitive point for me. I see that you have something. I really wish I had it, and that's why I'm jealous. Tzaras Ayin is, I don't even need the thing that you have, but I'm bothered by the fact that you have it. We're going to get back to this one because we have to understand this better. Number two, we said, is Kina, the regular jealousy. You have something. I wish I had it. I feel bad about it. Number three seems to not belong in the jealousy family, but it really does. And it's called Taiva. Taiva means desire, big eyes, I want it. What is the difference between Kina and Taiva? And again, this is not all the Bali Musar give this distinction. This is coming from the Alter of Kelm. He says something fascinating. He says, Kina is ben adam l'chaveiro, and Taiva is ben adam l'atzmo. If I see that you have something that I want, Kina is worse than Taiva, because Kina is, you have it, I want it, and I don't like you so much. Taiva is, you have it, I want it, wow, have a nice day. In fact, I was once discussing this with one of my children, and we were thinking that, like, Taiva is kind of like when you walk by a department store window and you see a beautiful dress on a mannequin. You're not angry at the mannequin for wearing that dress. You just want the dress. So some people are like human mannequins. They have things that we want. We say, wow, I wish I had that. But Taiva stops there. It doesn't get to anything not nice. Kina is worse than Taiva because Kina has an interpersonal negativity. I'll give an example. If a student in seminary notices, you know, a very pretty dress that somebody else is wearing and says something like, wow, that's a really nice dress. I wonder why she's wearing it on a weekday. I would never wear something like that on a weekday. I'd save that for Shabbat. It already has like an interpersonal shtach. Or, wow, great shoes. She has so many shoes. Why did she need 25 million pairs of shoes for the year in Israel? Like, when you have to like put the other person down or be critical, that's already, that's kinnon, it's not taiva. Taiva is big eyes. I see it, I want it, and I don't have any negativity towards you. So we're going down the ranks because it's getting less extreme. Tzaras Ayin is, I'm bothered by what you have, I'm not even in the race. Taiva is, you have it, I want it, and I don't like you. I'm sorry, Kina. You have it, I want it, I don't like you. Taiva is, you have it, I want it. And the next one, we're already getting to the more positive manifestations, is something called Kina Sofrim. Kina Sofrim. The Torah tells us that there's a certain type of jealousy that's legitimate. Now, we always think that kinat sofrim is when you're jealous of somebody's ruchnias. That is true. But kinat sofrim actually has two conditions. I am jealous of your ruchnias, of some value-centered, Torah-centered concept. I'm not jealous of your pocketbooks, but I'm jealous of the way you daven mincha or the way you speak nicely to your husband or whatever it is. And the second condition, I don't feel bad about you. Meaning it's a spiritual form of taiva. Because if I am jealous of your mincha, but then I say something cynical about how you keep the whole family waiting while you daven mincha, so then it's really a form of kina. It just happens to have a spiritual angle. In order for it to be considered a positive thing, it has two conditions. A, it's a value-centered thing. And B, I don't feel bad about you. Okay, we'll get more into that. And the ultimate final level, level number five, is what's called Ayin Tova. And Ayin Tova is, I wish you well. I want you to have good. I'm only happy for you. And it's interesting to see that the worst and the best start with the word Ayin. It's a perspective. How do I feel about you? In Tzaras Ayin, I don't see you. I only see me. In Ayin Tova, I only see you. It doesn't matter if I struggle with this area. I'm so happy for you that you have this thing. And that's the ultimate goal, is for us to get to Ayin Tova. Okay, let's go back to the beginning and let's try to analyze this a little bit. Tzaras ayin, why would I be bothered by your success if I don't even need what you have? So I once heard a fantastic presentation on what goes on in the Western world in the way we relate to other people's successes. There's three ways that my success and your success interact with each other. The first one is called independence. I do my thing, you do your thing, we don't have anything to do with each other. Neutral to negative, not a particularly Jewish concept. But your success doesn't trigger me in any way, doesn't affect me in any way. Then we have a second concept, which is very, very prevalent in the Western world. And it's called negative interdependence. Negative interdependence means we're linked negatively, like a seesaw. When you go up, I go down. Unfortunately, this is very Western, and we're going to talk about this in a minute. The third way is called positive interdependence, which means when you go up, I go up. That's a very Jewish concept. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. And the whole Kirov movement is built on positive interdependence. Why do I care if you keep Shabbos? Because we're all connected, and we all go up together. So as Jews in a Western world, we are very confused by other people's successes. The Western part of me is threatened by it. The Jewish part of me is happy for it. And I don't know how I feel about your success. But let's understand, what is negative interdependence and why is it so prevalent in Western society? At a very young age, when we start innocent things like children playing board games, so you have your Candyland and Chutes and Ladders and Jewish forms of Chutes and Ladders and Mitzvah Land. Anytime there's a game where there's one winner, we are pinning the players against each other. So here I am playing with my sister, who I love, and she's about to roll the die, and if she rolls a 5, she wins. And I find myself saying, please Hashem, just not a 5, just not a 5. Why? I love my sister. But if she wins, I lose. Competitions, races, brachos bees, mishnayos contests, even midos contests. Sacrilegiously, I want you to have bad midos so I could win the midos contest. Any place where there's one winner pins people against each other. Then we have sports. Olympics. I remember, this ages me. Maybe some people here remember this. When I was a girl, there was a picture that was on the cover of every newspaper in the world. There was an American Olympic runner. I think her name was Mary Loren. And she was tripped in the gymnast. So then I'm mixing it up. I don't remember who it was. It was an Olympic runner. And she was tripped by another runner. I forgot. What's that?
She's a figure skater.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm trying to remember. See, when I say this to my seminary students, they just smile. I can say anything I want. Here, you're helping me figure out what my memory is. So I thought it was Mary Lou Retton, but maybe it wasn't. Okay, so maybe I'm confusing something here, but I remember the picture on the cover of magazines was her tripping over somebody's leg. It was a foreign, I forgot if it was South African or New Zealand or something, and they were both disqualified from the Olympics, and everybody was in shock. And I remember thinking to myself as a little girl, if somebody practices 18 hours a day and this is their life goal, they surely want to trip the player next to them. They may not do it, but is it so crazy to think that there's a very big temptation to make sure nobody wins? And it made me start thinking that that's true in ball games and machanayim games and everything. Because if you are trying so hard to win and this person, if they win, you lose, you are really not davening for their success. And then we have academics. Valedictory. Any school that has one valedictorian is pitting the smartest kids in the class against each other, hoping that the other one will have a headache on the day of the final exam so that they could be valedictorian. Politics, we don't even have to talk about politics. And the schmutzing of each other. So what happens is that by the time you are, you know, have grown up in the Western world, you are already conditioned to feel that other people's successes may lead to your failure. And then, like the Pavlovian studies, you are conditioned. And when the bell rings, the dog salivates even when there's no food. And when you hear somebody else's mazel tov, you start thinking, uh-oh, what did I lose? Even if you're not in the race. And this explains the concept of tzaras ayin. Enough time somebody else's congratulations means I went home sad, that I start hearing that somebody else had a mazel tov, and I just automatically feel this like nervousness inside me. Now again, not everybody experiences this. And our purpose here today is not just to understand our own behavior, but maybe to understand why some people, you know, you heard the neighbor's, you know, child got engaged, you were thrilled, and you're sensing that somebody else is not as thrilled. So maybe they struggle. And maybe they've already married off their children. You know, I think to myself, there are people who will only, when somebody gets the main role in a production. So the people who tried out have to deal with their emotions that they wanted that position and didn't get it. But if you didn't even try out because you can't sing or dance to save your life, but you're saying, hey, why did she get that? That's a little bit of tzaras ayin. It's a little bit of having a hard time with other people's successes. So hopefully we understand this a little bit better. It's a complicated thing. Some of us don't feel it a lot. Some of it feel towards one sister-in-law. There's one person that when they get the new car or their kid gets into the best yeshiva or whatever it is, even if I don't have boys in yeshiva, I feel like, hey, really? Why do you get that? And this is tzaras ayin. Okay. Kina. This is actually something that I, in my classes, I've done over 8 weeks. So there's a lot to talk about in every one of these topics. I'm just kind of condense it. We'll get back to it a little bit. Kina. Why is kina so difficult? Why does Shlomo HaMelech say, kasha kishol kina, kina burns like Gehenna? And I thought about this a little bit, that I think that what happens with kina is that it often has things that add fuel to the fire. So let's remember that kina is when somebody has something that you need. And sometimes we think about silly examples like people's pocketbooks or their, you know, cars or whatever. But there are other serious things in this world that we really feel we need. And we watch somebody who's displaying it so beautifully, and we feel that pinch. And the more valuable the thing is, the more difficult it is, and the more real it is, that this really, really hurts me. There is a source in Sefer Bereishis, which Dafka maybe in a sense teaches us how normal this concept is, because it's really about Rachel and Leah. The pasuk says, "Vatar Rachel ki lo yalda liYaakov, v'tikaneh Rachel ba'achota." Rachel saw she didn't have children with Yaakov, and she was jealous of her sister. Now let's remember, Rachel Imenu was the least territorial person you can imagine. She gave up everything. And yet the Torah tells you, v'tikaneh, she was jealous. Rashi says there that she wasn't jealous of Leah's children. She was jealous of Leah's masim tovim. And she said, if I would be a better person, I would also have children. Now, how does Rashi come to that conclusion? Maybe because it's really hard to think that Rachel was actually jealous of the children. But the Or HaChaim says something very interesting on this pasuk. He says that Rachel was trying to figure out why. And she went through a process of elimination. Her first thought was maybe my husband has a biological issue and that's why we don't have children. And her husband was married to somebody and did have children with them, so that was out. Then she said maybe it's my biological issue. And this is like, you know, maybe old-time genetics. But the Or HaChaim says that she said to herself that she's probably tidameh b'mizgal achuta. She was probably similar in her biological composition to her sister. And her sister had children. So she assumed that it wasn't a biological issue for her. X. Next, spiritual reasons. Maybe my husband has sins, and that's why we don't have children. Her husband was a known tzaddik. Has sins, has averos. So, but her husband was a known tzaddik and had children. So she comes from the process of elimination to the conclusion that it must be her spiritual deficit that is causing this problem. And that's why Rashi says that she was jealous of Leah's masim tovim and not of Leah's children. Now, Rachel Imenu here is demonstrating for us what we should not do. Because the next pasuk, she turns to Yaakov and she says to him, Havali banim vim ayin meta anochi. Give me children or I'm going to die. Now that doesn't sound like our beloved Rachel Imenu. And the Ramban says, Dibra shelo kehogen mitok kenata, that her jealousy made her lose her logic. And she's saying to her husband, give me children, I'm going to die. So what do we learn? We learn something very important. When you try to figure out why you don't have that thing, and you attribute it to your own weaknesses, you're adding fuel to the fire. And I think this is a very important point, because we have all kinds of struggles in our life. Everything from our grades in school, to the seminaries we get into, to shidduchim, to children, to the success of those children. And sometimes we say, where did I go wrong? And that adds fuel to the fire. Because that's exactly what Rachel Imenu did. And we see it didn't lead her to a good place. So what should we say instead? If I don't say, where did I go wrong? What do we say? I don't have time to go into this deeply. It's a very big topic, but I'll quote you a source that I use often. It's the Chidah. The Chidah was the Rebbe of the Ari, the famous Ari HaKadosh. He wrote a Kabbalistic sefer called Midbar Kedmot, and I don't know anything about Kabbalah, but somebody once sent me this source, and I thought it was very powerful. Midbar Kedmot Yud Chaf Gimel tells a way to understand why you don't have certain things and why you do have other things, why you have certain struggles. Because our nature is often to blame ourselves. The same person who Rabbi Dr. Tversky was talking about who criticizes their primary response also says, well, I probably didn't do a good job raising children if my child came out like that. Or I must be doing something wrong in Shidduchim if I'm not married yet. It's that self-beating voice that many of us have. Another possibility on the other side is I must be the Gadol Adar and I'm a kapar for the whole generation. You don't know that either. So what is the safe approach to why we go through difficult things that could lead to more balance in the way we deal with the struggle? So the Chidah says something very powerful. He says that right after the conception of a person, before the pregnancy actually starts, Malach Molech Hanefesh Laotzer Hatzlamim Shivchar Lo Tzelem Kirtzono. A Malach takes this nefesh, the soul, to an otzar. Otzar means a warehouse of tzelem, of form, that he should pick the form of his life. And then the Chidah goes through a list, aroch katzar, a long life or a short life, shalem or bal mum, healthy or with a deformity, yafel mechoar, beautiful or ugly. And I say to my children, imagine going to Costco with like a, do you have Costco here in Baltimore? Yeah. You go to Costco with a, you know, shopping cart, the malach is with you, and you're pulling things off the shelf. The Chidah says at the end, v'imken, ein kol adam, Mitra'im al Hashem Yitzbarach, ki hu bachar bekach. He says, on a deep level, people are not angry at Hashem about their life circumstances because they chose it by themselves. This is a very powerful source. There's a lot of questions on it. But the point is, it's a very equalizing way to look at a struggle. Did I go wrong? Who says? Am I a kapara? Who says? One thing I know is that my soul chose this, and it didn't have to choose it, but it did. If I had more time, I would analyze this more with you, but I'll say that my two questions that I often ask on this source is, why would anybody choose anything bad? And second of all, why does the Chida say that people aren't angry at Hashem? Some people are angry at Hashem. And the answer to that second question is that your soul chose it before your body was there. Your body includes the emotional responses. So when you run into a difficult circumstance, when you're, 25, 30, 50, 60, whatever age you are, your body, who wasn't there at the time of the choosing, says, what is going on here? I didn't sign up for this. And your soul says, sorry, I signed you up before you got here. And this is really the back and forth. I once heard this expression that surprise is the enemy of emotion. We don't do well with surprises. When you know you're about to get a shot, so it might not be pleasant, but you usually don't scream so loud that the whole doctor office is, alarmed. But when you wake up in the middle of the night and you step on a needle or a piece of glass, you scream. Because surprise is the enemy of emotion. The body doesn't do well with surprises. And the body's surprised. Didn't know this was coming. But the soul says, deja vu, I chose this for you. And this is how we struggle with difficult circumstances. There's a part of us that is really upset. And there's a part that somewhere deep down inside knows that we can handle this. And it's very difficult. Why would anybody choose anything bad? So I'll give you a mashal. It's a more recent mashal that I have. In the olden days, when people used to make Sheva Brachos, they had to either cook everything themselves or call everybody and find out what do you want to make and check with the other one. Today, people put out a Google Doc to all the invitees and say, what are you making? Now, there's what I call the rice ladies, the ones who choose the easy thing. I call them rice ladies. It's a certain mentality. And then you have the one who chooses the double rolled schnitzel with the pesto inside and the whatever, whatever. Now, why do they choose that? They did not have to choose that. There was a reason. Either they want to, they're very close to the niece, they feel they owe somebody something, they love their. There's reasons why people take things off the shelf. When you can choose life experiences, and some people choose very hard ones, it's an active choice that people make. The soul has a concept of what it has to go through, and the soul chooses things. And the Rechida says that most people have a mix. Nobody has it all good or all bad. But the balance between different factors is very, very individual. And I don't really want to divert the whole thing into this topic, but Rav Chaim Vital says that a person who comes into the world, hiskimu la'oto ha-metziyut, he agrees to the reality, hayafelhem yoter min ha-arev. That's more pretty, yafeh, than it's pleasant, arev. Souls choose things that are more pretty than pleasant. When you do a difficult cosmetic procedure or a difficult exercise routine, you're choosing pretty over pleasant. What you're going through this second is not very pleasant, but it's for the bigger goal of your beauty. The soul also has a beauty routine. And it's willing to go through things sometimes that are difficult, that are not pleasant, in order to bring out the yofi. And again, it's not our topic for today, but the reason why I brought it in is because it's an equalizer. It's something that you could think about where you don't have to blame yourself. And I deal with all kinds of people going through struggles, and so often, where did I go wrong? We learn from Rachel Imenu that kind of thinking adds fuel to the fire, and it makes it very unbearable. I'll say one more point. People say, am I not supposed to grow through my struggles? There's a very big difference between saying, this happened to me because I did something wrong, and between saying, as a source for my situation, I'd like to work on something. I get this sometimes. People say to me in terms of like tzniyos things. So there is a shita out there, it's not my shita, that says, people are dying today because your shetel's too long or your skirt's too short or whatever. I don't feel that I have the right to say that. and I don't feel it's so helpful. If you want to say, there is, Klal Yisrael is going through a difficult time and we have ammunition to help Klal Yisrael by working on our fill in the blanks, Tzidkus, Lashon Hara, Shabbos, or anything else, great, but you're not blaming something. You're not saying this happened because you're not okay in this area. You're saying, I would like to be mitchazek and help Klal Yisrael with any one of the areas that it achieves the same goal, but in a way that A, philosophically is more sound. I don't know why Hashem does things. And B, it motivates not out of fear and guilt. I'm empowered to help a situation. I want to grow through the vulnerability of the situation I'm in now, and I'd like to work on myself. Of course, we all want to grow from difficult situations. So this is what we learn about Kena, and it explains why Kena is so difficult. When you start blaming yourself and attributing what happened to the mistake you made yesterday and the mitzvah that you're not good at and the mitzvah you didn't keep properly, you're going down a very, very slippery, slidey slope. And instead say, I want to prove myself and I want to work on something. Okay. Much more to say on all of this, but let's go on. Taiva is when you see something and you want it, and it's without feeling negative towards the other person. Now, I heard a presentation by Rav Matasiyahu Salomon years ago on the Tisha B'Av, presentations, where he said, you know, at the time I didn't relate so much to the example that he brought because it was more of a male example. But when I thought about it, I said, look how things turn from taiva into kinna. So he said, let's say your neighbor gets a really nice new car. He says, five thoughts that go through your mind. One thought, thought number one, wow, that's a great car. Thought number two, I wish I had a car like that. Thought number three, I deserve a car like that. Yeah. Third, number four, I'm sorry to say, but you really don't deserve it. Thought number five, you stole my car, Ganav. So if you notice, there's a movement from taiva to kinna. At first, it's just big eyes, I like your car. And then it's, I do deserve it, you don't deserve it, you took my car. Over the years, I started applying this five stages to a lot of different ways that we think about things. So I teach people at different stages of life in different situations. I'm going to give a few examples. I teach a lot of young, newly marrieds who live in Yerushalayim. And child rearing is very difficult these days. And, you know, you have a mother with a little child, maybe a five-year-old boy, comes to the park, and she knows every time she comes to the park, it's going to be difficult because her little child is very, very ADD, ADHD, running around, pushing little kids off the swings, you know, making the little girls cry, taunting cats. Every time she goes to the park, there's a lot of drama, but she has to get out of the house because in the house, he's wreaking havoc. So a neighbor comes to the park with her little son and sits down next to our nice little young mother. And she's with her little son of the same age. And he brought his little Sefer Tehillim with him to the park. He opens up the Tehillim and he's reading because the Nekudos are a little difficult. And he's reading and reading the whole parak. And after that, he closes the Sefer. And he says to his mother, Mommy, you look so thirsty. I'm going to go up all 10 flights to get you a drink. And then he turns to our young mother and says, oh, you look thirsty too. I'll bring two. Meantime, her kids are, her son's like taunting cats and making little girls cry. So what are the five thoughts that go through that first mother's mind? Number one, what a great kid. What a tzaddik. Number two, I wish I had a tzaddik like that. Number three, I deserve a tzaddik like that. I have gone for every bracha by every rav. I daven ma'ariv because Robertson Kaldetsky told me to. I bring in Shabbos 20 minutes before Hadlakas Neros. And I spend my whole week going to occupational therapy and speech therapy and physical therapy and bibliotherapy and hydrotherapy and anything to help this child. And my child is still running around taunting cats. Number four, you don't deserve a child like that. I mean, I hate to say it, but I notice what time you light candles. And you're kind of like sitting drinking iced coffee while I'm running to every therapy in the world. And your kid is a tzaddik? Number five. You took my child. I don't sit next to kidnappers. I'm going to the next bench. And this is very real. It's very difficult when you try so hard in some area and you find that somebody else seems to have it easy. It moves from taiva to kina very, very easily. I'll bring another example from the seminary girl world. You know, when you're living under people 24/7, there's a lot of challenges. So in our Western world today, people are very, very, very conscious about body image. Girl gets dressed in the morning. She doesn't love the outfit she's wearing. She changes it again. She changes it the third time. And she walks out of her room and somebody with a perfect figure walks out from the dorm right next door. First thought, wow, what a great figure. Second thought, I wish I had a figure like that. Third thought, I deserve a figure like that. I don't eat ice cream. I don't eat chocolate. I barely put salad dressing on my salad. Fourth thought, you don't deserve a figure like that. I live with you. I see you eat junk all day, and you just have this metabolism that keeps you a size 2 no matter what you eat. Number five, you stole my figure. I really don't like you so much. And by the way, there are people who have told me, girls who do particularly beautiful or particularly talented, they say, sometimes I feel like I'm a person who people love to hate. You know, people who are challenged by somebody will often say, she's snobby, she's this, she's that, she's entitled. You know, we kind of tack on our little things where it turns from taiva to kina. And we have complaints against people who seem to have it easy and easier in an area we have hard. I'll bring one last application in the world of boys. And I see this often. That sometimes you'll have a boy who really is such a tzaddik. But he struggles in learning. And our society expects so much cognitive ability. Gemara is really hard to learn. It's like a Harvard society where not everybody is Harvard material. But the boy's a tzaddik and all he wants is to know Hashem's Torah. He sits there and he tries so hard and he stays after hours to try to understand Shir. In walks somebody who's not a big masmid, not a big tzaddik, isn't taking yeshiva so seriously. Walks into Shir a little bit late, kind of leans back in his chair. The Rav gives a Shir, says, does anybody understand the connection between the Tosfos and the Ran? And this guy's like, yeah, the Ran says this, so. The Rav's like, wow. What a svara. What are the five thoughts? Our struggling tzaddik says, wow, that's an amazing svara. Number two, I wish I could say a svara like that. Number three, I deserve to say a svara like that. I plug over the shir day and night. I'm up till 2 in the morning. I cry in my davening atachonin. You don't deserve to say a svara like that. I know what you're doing in your free time. You're not following Hashem's ratzon in many ways. And Hashem gave you a great head for Torah. And you don't even take Ruchniyah so seriously. You stole my svara. I don't like you. And this is very, very real. Some of the people who are very gifted are not necessarily so serious about Hashem's ratzon. And some people who all they want is to connect Hashem's Torah are not gifted. And it's a difficult struggle when they're sitting in the same classroom with the same Beis Medrash. So this reality of things moving from taiva to kina is very, very real in our lives. Okay, let's see how much time we have. Oh, I have to start winding down. Okay. Kina Sofrim. Kina Sofrim is an elevated form of kina. I have students who tell me that when they were young, they were very competitive around silly things. But then they grow up, they become more mature. And in seminary, the things that they're jealous of are, wow, I wish I had this girl's midos. I wish I could daven with kavanah like her. I wish I, whatever these other people do. And it's hard. When it's something in Ruchnias, it matters more to you than, you know, the competition around clothing and pocketbooks. So it's difficult for people. And sometimes there is this tendency to put down the person who's such a tzaddikus. Even when it's something in the adult world, like somebody tells you about somebody who's one of these chatzos, Erev Shabbos people, that they have their whole family dressed and saying Shir Shirim by 12 in the afternoon. And sometimes I hear people saying, well, yeah, if I had three maids and two butlers, I'd also be doing that. The need to kind of like, it's we have to be careful. Because really what Kina Sofrim is, it's you're an inspiration to me. In order for it to be the good stuff that Chazal say, that Kina was put in your nature for you to sublimate it and use it for the right way, it's like, I wish I had your patience. I wish I had your ruchnius. And stick around, because you're a good influence on me. And therefore, we have to make sure that we don't need to put down people who are successful. We have to be inspired by them. And I think the idea here is that it's two things. We're not supposed to be putting down the other person, but we're also not supposed to be putting ourselves down. Everybody has areas of strength and weaknesses in Avodas Hashem. And when you see somebody else and you're inspired by them, the idea is not I'm inadequate. The idea is that when I'm around you, I go up a notch in my way. And I quoted the other night a quote that Batya Galant in her book, Stages of Spiritual Growth. She says, spiritual growth is measured by distance covered and not by destination reached. So when I look at somebody else and say, ah, I won't be a good davener until I daven like her, I'm not putting her down, but I'm putting myself down. The idea is your inspiration is rubbing off on me, and I'll take myself up a notch on my level. I'm not in a race. I don't have to get to where you are. But it's nice for me to see it because I'm not beating myself up. I know my own struggles. I know my own strengths. But it's nice for me to be around somebody who's a good davener. It reminds me that I would like to work on my davening. But not in a competitive sense and not in a self-beating sense. In a healthy, wow, it's beautiful to be around grown people. And it has a very, very fine line before it gets to be self-beating, critical, competitive. No, this is just, it's beautiful. I'm so proud of you. And I don't need to put you down. And I don't need to put myself down. Okay, that's Kina Sofra. Ayin Tova is the ultimate. In Ayin Tova is where we completely cover our own ego. And we focus on appreciating what other people are, wishing them well, enjoying their successes. This is not always so easy. And the Chassid Yavetz says that it's a derech in life. The Mishnah Avos says that it's a derech. It's not just a midah, it's a derech. It's a way of life. And the way of life is that this has nothing to do with me. This is about you. And therefore, it could be that you have success in areas where I don't. And the Chassid Yavetz says, I wish you well. I wish you well in all areas. And I wish you well even when you surpass me. Because it's not about me. It's about you. Now, what do we need to do in terms of having a Ayin Tova? I want to just say something about Ayin Tova. When you have an Ayin Tova, you increase your happiness quotient in life tremendously. Tal Ben Shachar, who is the Harvard professor who created this concept of positive psychology, I don't know if he created it or he has his own form of it, but he's written a lot about positive psychology. So he has like a graph where he has like a circle with four quadrants of life experiences. Quadrant number one is when the good things happen to me. Check, smile, makes me feel good. Quadrant number two, when bad things happen to me, makes me feel bad, thumbs down. Quadrant number three, when bad things happen to other people, we don't like to hear about tragedies, makes me feel bad. So far, 50% of life experience makes me feel not so good, 25% yes. And then comes the telling fourth quadrant. When good things happen to other people, how do you feel? If you have Tsaras Ayin, then this is another form of sadness. 75% of life experiences make you feel bad. And if you can get some nachas from other people's good news, you're just making yourself a happier person. It's really worth it to work on this mitzvah, even just for our own emotional health, to be able to really feel happy about somebody else. But it's easier said than done. And I want to spend the next few minutes giving the solutions. I think that there are two factors that help us get on the Ayin Tova path as opposed to the Kina Tzaras Ayin path. One of them is Bitachon, and the other is Avas Yisrael. Bitachon. Bitachon tells me that when I see something that you have, I have to accept the fact that Hashem has a cheshbon as why he gave it to you and not to me. In fact, when we're threatened that other people are taking away our success, we have a very important chazal in Yuma Lamed Ches. Chazal says, Ein Adam Nogea B'muchan Chavero. Nobody can take away what was meant for you. Kimlo Hanima, even by a hair's breadth. What happens is sometimes you have a child who's in Shidduchim and there aren't so many people of the right type for her to go out with. And then you hear that your next door neighbor's daughter is going out with that boy. And it's hard to be happy because you were hoping that that boy was going to go out with your daughter. When you really believe that nobody could take away anything that was meant for you, not a spot in seminary and not a shidduch and not a job, nothing. Then we are not so anxious and so triggered by other people's successes. Because a lot of the negativity comes from the, uh-oh, you're taking something away from me. And the Gemara is telling you that even if there's one job available and two people are applying for it, if the other person got the job, it wasn't your job. They didn't take it away from you. It was not yours. Nobody in this world has the ability to affect your goral, take anything away from you. Hashem runs the world, not them. And he's not reconstellating millions of shidduchim and shemayim because your neighbor's going out with that boy. If the neighbors, you know, make the shidduch with that family, then this was not your shidduch. And once you realize that, we at least bring down the threat that other people are taking away from our success. And this is true about technically when someone gets the shidduch, the job, the space in the yeshiva. But it's also true conceptually, you know, why do I? No one's taking away your status in your community. No one's taking away your friends. No one's taking away anything from you. People are not that powerful. So when you really internalize that message, it's easier to have an Ayin Tova because it wasn't mine, so I can enjoy it on you. We have a very funny source for this, Rav Daniel Moshavitz, who is a Talmud of the Alter Mikelm. He says that when you look at what somebody else has, it looks good on them because it was part of their chelek. But if it would be on you and it wasn't yours, it would look ugly on you. So the mashal is a mashal of six fingers. If somebody has beautiful fingers, and I'm jealous of their fingers, they look gorgeous on them. But a sixth finger is a deformity, no matter how beautiful the sixth finger is, because excess is deformity. Beautiful on you, ugly on me. Your blonde sheitel looks beautiful on you, would look ugly on me. So we need to know that when we see things on other people, it looks beautiful on them because it's part of their chelek. And there is a place to focus on this in our Birkos HaShachar. Rav Olba says if a person works on this, I think he says for 2 years, he knew somebody who worked on it and like little by little changed his way of viewing the world. The bracha says, Sha'asali kol tzarki. It doesn't even say Shanatanli. He gave me. He made it for me. What I have in my life is tailor-made for me. And therefore, your outfit won't fit me. And it looks really nice on you, but not on me. When a person really focuses on Shaseli Kotsarki, he can slowly get to the place where he becomes more at peace with what he has and with what he doesn't have. And this is like a whole avoda to work on. It's not simple. And I find that a lot of us, the things that we are bothered by are real things. There are things that are so important to us and very, very difficult. And sometimes you work on it, you're doing well, and then there's a trigger that comes in and starts the process again. But that's mitos. They go up and down. And sometimes Hashem is going to challenge you and you'll get back to it. Okay. Avas Yisrael. If we believe that we are on the same team as other people, we have a much easier time with their success. Ball players who are not known for their altruism. Every ball player wants to be the one to score. But the next best thing is when somebody on your team scores. When someone on your team scores, they all are cheering. If we could only get to the place where we feel that other people are on our team, and it's another point for the team. And that really is the antidote to this negative interdependence that we're so conditioned towards. We want to be able to think, no one's taking anything away from me, and we're all in this together, so it's another point for my team. I once was thinking of a certain method, something very physical even, to work on the positive interdependence and how we, instead of feeling that other people are threatening us. So it came to me once on the first day of a school year when my little son was starting first grade. And I was davening, and I always think in the beginning of a school year that we need our children to be motzei chen in the eyes of their teachers, because it's a very long, hard year if there's no chen. And chen is a very elusive ingredient. Tehillim pei dalet, chen v'chavod yitain Hashem. Hashem gives chen. And therefore, when I daven, I say, sim shalom tov v'racha chaim, chen v'yichunaka. And I think, this child should be a cutie in the eyes of his Rebbe this year. And then I started thinking about the nusach. Sim shalom tov v'racha chaim, chen v'chesed v'rachamim, aleinu v'al kol Yisrael amecha. And all of a sudden I said to myself, one second, do I need the Rebbe to go home and say, Shimi is the cutest boy in my class? Why not the Rebbe saying, I have 30 adorable children this year. They're all wonderful. Why do I need my kid to have the chen and somebody else not to have the chen? So it started me on a way of thinking of positive interdependence, that nobody else's child's chen is taking away from mine. And you don't want someone else's child to be a dramatic foil to yours, and he should say, oh, I love Shimmy, but Yoni's a pain. Why would I want anything bad for anybody else? So I started thinking, I call it the sweep. Sim shalom tov avracha chaim chen v'chesed rachamim aleinu v'al kol Yisrael amecha. Anything we daven for ourselves, we can sweep everybody into that bakasha. Hashem, send my child the shidduch and anybody who's struggling in shidduchim. Because this teaches you that nobody's taking anything away from you and we're all in it together. So it literally has become like a visual thing in my mind when I get to those parts of the davening, al kol Yisrael amecha. That anything we daven for, we want everybody to have it. Because we're all in this together. And I think that when a person works on their bitachon and their avos Yisrael, they get to a place where we're all celebrating each other's celebration. We're all like the ball players who are cheering when somebody gets a point. And I think that this makes us healthier, makes us more unified. It keeps us together. And it really is the hashkafa that we'd like to internalize when it comes to other people's successes. So that's it for today, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.